We are on Yud Ches Amud Al. We just finished the two answers. What does it mean when the Mishnah says Mishameso?
Right.
And according to the opinion of Rashi, it was not necessarily that the body has to physically be right there, just as long as you're involved in the process of the Kvura,
right. Right.
And that's considered already Mobul Fonov, to the point that you're now putter from all the mitzvahs.
Right.
Okay. So that's what we discussed when we went last week through Hilchos and Nidos. We went through a lot of the Halachos. So now let's continue to the next piece. The Gemara says, Meso in. The only time a person is putter from all these mitzvahs must be only if it's your mace, someone, one of your relatives. That's what the Mishnah says. Misha Meso Motul Fana. Which implies anyone else not, including a shomer. Someone who is guarding the mace from it getting damaged, or whatever. That person apparently is not pukta for mitzvos. I was signing, we learned not like that. Shomer's a mace, alhopish, eno mace, so. Pukta me kriyashma, mitzvila, mitzvila, mikol mitzvos, and verse of Torah. Very clear that it's not just Misha Mesa Mutal Fana, but even the Shomer is putter from all mitzvot. So how can you say this? So where is you're right. It's not only referring to that. It's not only referring to the Misha Mesa Mutal Fana. It's even the Shomer. This is how you have to read it. Shomra Ahmo Misha Eno Meso. Meso Ahmo Pish Eno Misham. So therefore, what it's coming to tell us is that it's not necessarily referring specifically to it's not only referring to a person who's lost a relative that these laws apply, but also a shomer. So therefore, you could be a shomer. You could be a shomer and the law and not one of the relatives over here. You'd cut some of it off. Yeah. Or on the other hand, it could be that you are one of the relatives, even though you're not really doing anything for the mace, nonetheless you're putter. So that's what we were discussing in this Mishnah. That a person who is involved in the process of the burial.
Well, let me ask you a question. What about a funeral director?
Well, the question
a person
is
involved in funerals.
Question is that person the shomer? Is he
basically well let's wait a second. If you have the body, right?
Right.
You're the shomer, but nobody else is watching the body. Aren't you considered a shomer of the mace? You're preparing it for the bed, you're burying it, there's no other shomer.
The question is, what does it mean, a shomer?
Right. What constitutes a shomer?
Door was open.
Okay. What constitutes a shomer? Let's look at it. Now, what I'm saying,
right.
I mean, and if you are, the body's not supposed to be without somebody watching it, correct?
No. Something better I'll give you. Yeah. How many times do you see when the Aaron being taken to the cemetery, you know, they have Goyisha drivers and nobody goes along with them. First of all, it's wrong.
You mean nobody goes in the hearse?
Right.
Some do. Some in the past.
Yeah. I'm saying it. If it's a Jew,
right.
So how did so? But it's not a Jew. Yeah. It's a bit so. Am I right or wrong? Isn't a mess not supposed to be left alone with
and that's what I'm saying. So what about if a guy is involved, you know, in his funeral home? So even in his funeral home, are they considered Mesa Mutal Fana? Are they considered the Shomer since they it's under their auspices that they have the body, so to speak?
Well, the question again, we have to figure out
that's
what
why
is
you
shomer.
Go to, hypothetically, it's a Jewish place, so they should be a Shomer.
But I'm saying, but based on what we're learning here in the Gemara, so I'm saying, so the funeral guy, he never has to do any mitzvahs. He's always busy with dead bodies. He should never have to put on tefillah, never have to do any of the things, because he's busy constantly watching bodies.
But the difference is, he could have somebody else. So he's there in the premises. I don't think that's it. I think the difference is something else. Where a fella can have somebody else substitute another Jew for him, a worker, the boss of the place, is one thing. But in the Shnayimdach, when you have your own mother, father, brother, sister thing, that's truthfully what I think makes Mutal Fanav is when it's it's your relative. That's when you're really.
No, but we do. But that's not halacha. But now we're learning the next thing. We're handling this. We now on to the next thing. We're talking about you know, with you're a shomer, and a shomer is not a relative. A shomer is an appointed shomer. So I'm saying is a person who runs a funeral home, is he considered a shomer? He's under his auspices. And therefore, because of my question is because he's a shomer, so he shouldn't be have to do basically almost that has to happen.
I'm sure there are.
Well, one of the things that you touched upon, which we'll see in a moment, is after we get to the two after the two dots,
right.
It differentiates, distinguishes
between, right.
One person in two, which means that if you can have someone else there, then you can switch off. I'll do a mitzvah. I'll say Shema. You be the shomer, and then. Vice versa.
I understand it.
So it's possible. So therefore, maybe when you talk about, say, for example, a funeral director,
right?
You're not the only one.
Yeah, but maybe that's if he has Jews working on. Let's say you're Jewish and you have friends working for you.
It shouldn't be.
But to have in every moment, no, you're saying if I'm the only one there and
I think
there's the whole time.
Like
no
bodies, his bodies are coming in and out.
But you probably have someone else that's designated to assist or someone to assist you, and therefore it's not only your responsibility. So therefore, you could step away and do mitzvahs. It's only in the event that at the time, and you're the only shomer. If you can get another shomer, then you should switch. That's what the Gemara is going to sound like later on. And but the way that the shomer that we have, the shmir we have nowadays, is really for a different level, different reason. The shmir, which we're going to see by the next two dots, is because of Cheshinan L'Akvari, because of the concern of mice. Seriously.
I know, there are mice everywhere.
But, well, that's,
no, but in those days.
In those days, before there was no refrigeration or whatever. So to be a shomer, just the plain reason of being a shomer was to protect the body from being physically destroyed or being being disgraced. That's what the Gemara is going to say. We're going to see that in those words. That's seemingly the basic reason for shmir.
But
nowadays, there's another element of shmir. You're saying right, saying the Hillel and this. So that's another element.
Even
of
in that
shmir.
Day, one thing about our religion, I mean, except in rare cases, we bury the body within a very short period of time after the.
Yeah, maybe in those days you couldn't do it that quick. I don't know.
But what was the halacha was also even then to bury the, you know, the.
Let's say that night, and the mace is in the person's home. There was no funeral chapels, so you'd have to have someone standing there watching the whole time, make sure that the body was preserved properly, and that it wasn't disgraced. So, yeah, obviously, I mean, that's probably part of the reason why we do the kfurah so fast, is because we don't believe in all these other techniques of preserving the body,
right,
whatever, right? So, but maybe we'll see that when we get to that piece of Gemara, and we'll read a little bit. We'll maybe think about that idea again. So we're up to the Gemara, which says Meso Neshamer in Avol Mahalech Beveis Kfar Slo. Now that we're saying it's not just Mace, as the Mishnah says, Misha Meso Mutlafana, one of the relatives, those people are Pater, but also the person at the time of their job of watching the body, also he's potter, but it implies only those two people are potter, excluding someone who is walking in the base of forest. You walk into a cemetery, maybe it sounds like you're still chayav to do mitzvahs, but we know that's not true. But sign we learn, l'yahalach odnim b'base ha'kvaros, a person is not allowed to go into a cemetery, the tefillin barosho, the sefer Torah b'zroa b'kari, you're not allowed to have the tefillin on your head, sefer Torah in your arms, and reading. And the reason why it says it in that way, if you look at this little Tosfot over here, which is the first one on the page after this long
recite.
One. Right. He says, "V'hu hadin di alpeh aso likros." It doesn't just mean holding a sefer Torah.
You can't even learn Torah. You can't even do alpeh, you know, whatever.
Right. That's what Tosfot says. And then going back to the Gemara, "V'im aso kein," if you do so, which you're not supposed to, over Mishom, you violate the Pasuk Loig L'Rosh Cherem So, that you are considered to have scoffed and humiliated the poor and the destitute. Embarrassment and shame you have caused your Maker. So Lola Garush. You're not allowed to do a mitzvah. That's the basic words of why you're not allowed to do a mitzvah in front of a mace. The mace obviously can no longer perform mitzvahs, and you can. So that's a humiliation, similar to embarrassing a person who is impoverished. Okay, we'll discuss that in better detail in the Marsha when we get another 8 lines down. But nonetheless, the Gemara's kasha. The Gemara's kasha is, how could you tell me that it's only a relative? Or Shomer, we know even any guy who walks into Mystic Bars, you're not allowed to do mitzvahs. So the Gemara answers, you're right, but there's a basic difference. Hasam over there, Tokar Amos, Hud Asim. Chutz Arba Amos, Chayim. The only time you're potter for mitzvahs is only if you're within Arba Amos of the mace. However, if you're beyond the Arba Amos or outside of the cemetery, then Chayim, you now obligated. Yomer Mar, mace Toipis Dalad Amos, Lekriyashma. That a mace has within it the 4 Amos of space, which halakhically, in what there's also, you can be Kona things within your realm of 4 Amos. So a mace also, if you're within 4 Amos of that mace, you're not allowed to say Kriyashma. But outside of that, you have to say the Shema. Hacha, chutzadan Amos, now you potter. Over here, even beyond 4 Amos, you potter. It doesn't matter where you're standing. You don't have to be physically lefanav in front of the mace. You're always going to be potter. Therefore, it's true. Only when it comes to the relative or shomer is potter, because the fact that you're potter is not based on your proximity of the mace. Obviously, the shomer's got to be pretty close, but the point is you're potter nonetheless. Osei for mitzvah, we discussed this, potter mitzvah, kavod, maybe kavod hamace, so different reasons, but when it comes to in a cemetery, the reason why you're potter is nothing to do with you in your interaction with the mace. The person was already buried. The purpose is because of the Loga Rush. The Loga Rush, you can't do a mitzvah within 4 Amos. Outside of 4 Amos, once you're past, not in the cemetery anymore, you have to say the Shema right away. And therefore, that's the basic difference between the two. Okay. Gufa, going back to what we said before, the Gemara said, the Shomer is a mace, someone who is guarding mace. First white line. So, when it says the person is potter, is anyone who's a shomer, right? Which may be the question which was asked. So, continues the Gemara, not always. What happens in Hoyushnayim? What if there was not just one person, but there was two people? So, what do you need two shomer for? Right. You don't need two shomer, right? Zeh Mishamer Zekar. Zemeshem is in Karbus. So they exactly take turns. One will be the Shomer, one will say the Shema, and then after he's finished, they will flip. So that's not a problem. And that's something which, at least you always have your eyes on the mace. But you don't need 4 sets of four eyes, just 2 is enough. Ben Azeh goes so far as to say, you know what? How you boyin besfina? Let's say that the mace is on a boat, or airport. Let's say on a boat. He says that you don't even need to stare at the mace. It doesn't make a difference. You both, right? Both of you can just daven, but he says, don't daven right in front of the mace because of the little garage. You have to daven a little bit at a distance. But you do not have to watch the mace at all. Now, why does he mention the case of a sfina? It must be Ben Azai is being lenient and holds that for some reason by a boat, you don't need a shomer at all times to be watching the mace. However, according to the first opinion, he doesn't distinguish between a boat or on dry land, which implies that you always need to watch that mace, even on a sfina. So the Gemara asks, what's the nachgamina? What's the difference between these two opinions? My benayhu. So Ravina choshishin l'akvarim ik benayhu. Mar Sabar Chayshinon, one is concerned for mice. Mar Sabar Loi Chayshinon, the other one is not Chayshinon. So what do you mean? Obviously, on dry land, the mice can come. On a boat, you know, I guess there could be mice on boats, boy. The question is it really Machlokas, or maybe it was a different style? You know, one was in first class, so there was no mice in first class. That's a good question, exactly, if they really argue with one another. But for some reason, the second opinion of Ben Azai was not concerned that there would be mice on both, so the chances are much less likely that it would
kind of be another Indian, not an Indian of mice, maybe they're body snatching, you know, on a boat, and where are they going to take them? You're out in the open water. You know, inland dry land people, you know, they walk the body.
I think Martin never says about sneaking the body.
But I'm saying, what about that, that possibility?
That wasn't the Shamir.
No, on a boat I'm talking about. Or even in dry land, you have to watch the body. Somebody come across and desecrate it. But here on a boat, you're kind of in a restricted area.
So for that reason, maybe everyone agrees on a boat is not an issue.
Exactly. You don't have to do so much watching because you're in a close proximity to wherever you are. But in dry land, many things could happen.
Right. Well, on dry land, apparently everyone holds you have to always have your eyes on.
Right, exactly.
It could be numerous reasons.
Yeah. I want to ask you another question. Where's the Shamira today when you put a body in a plane and you fly to Israel? No, so serious. Don't tell me the people upstairs are all the Shamirs. They don't know where.
No, but there's somebody that's accompanying the body. Maybe that's his job.
The body's in the porthole.
Yeah, right.
And the people are upstairs. We're not cautious that they'll change it or. There's other fears, you know. That's why they mark the name on the outside of the box. They should mix up the body sometimes.
Right.
You know, between that. But, I mean, I guess maybe in different times there are different reasons for Shamir.
Yeah, but on an airplane, maybe similar to the opinion of Ben Azai, there's no concern of mice on an airplane.
Right.
And airport, you, just as long as you have to be in the same
proximity,
so even if you're in a different corner, you're in a different part of the airplane, that's sufficient. Similar to being on a different corner of the boat, as long as you're on the same boat. You're on an airplane accompanying it. That may be sufficient.
It's
questionable even if you need to accompany. That's another show.
Where?
On an airplane? I mean, you would think you should.
You would think even on an airplane, you know, there's no such fear of mice. I don't know if you could say that. I mean, now, yes, if the body is in cargo where the atmospheric pressure drops down where something can't live.
Nothing.
You know, then there's no fear of mice. But,
mice are not of sort. But today, even with the airplanes here, if you've ever seen it, you know, it's in a metal case. That's
right, they put in a metal
case. You have to put in a metal case.
Yeah, right.
That's with, you know what kind of screws? With headless screws. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
I took my father to Texas, that's an amazing thing. The screws are not with a straight screwdriver. It has a two-hole screwdriver.
Uh-huh.
You know, the...
Yeah.
And it goes. It's a...
probably part of
and
the...
Now they make, so. And then they came up with a new thing. They make the oil now, the metal box,
yeah.
You see it? And they take the box, and they make a complete box around the metal box, completely around. What the idea is that the Kohanim should be able to go...
Be on the plane.
Now they're in a, am I right, saying oil? Is it not?
Kohen, otherwise there'd be a tumah, and the Kohen couldn't be allowed on the plane.
Right. So in order to be allowed today, They make this paper box.
Okay. Very good.
I guarantee I know who started.
So, that's the machlokes of the Gemara. Let's move on. Turn around. Hamoylech atzamos mamakum mamakum. A person who brings bones from one place to the next. Obviously, he needs to find a place to bury them. And he has to, of course, be very careful to treat them with dignity and respect. Harizel lo yitnam b'diskyo, he cannot place it in his saddlebag. V'yitnam al gavi chamorin, to put it on his donkey. V'yirkav aleihem, and to ride upon them. Mitnei shenog behem minhag b'zoyim. Sounds like he's physically on top of the bones, and that's a b'zoyim. V'im hoyim misyari mitnei nachrim. That they list him, however, he's concerned of bandits coming and doing damage, taking away the remains. Mutter, then he's allowed to do so. He can do whatever he wants because it's not derech b'zayim. He's not doing it in a way to disgrace the mace. He's doing it to preserve it so it doesn't get taken in the event that someone comes. Kederech she'amar b'atzamos, just like this halacha applies with bones, kach amar b'sefer Torah. The same laws apply to a Sefer Torah. And this Gemara asks, hey, what's this going on? In other words, when you say the statement, the same laws of bones apply to the Torah, well, the law of bones, there's two things we just mentioned. So if you want to tell me, Lema Reisha, maybe you're talking about the first part. What was the Reisha? That you're not allowed to sit on the bones in your saddlebag because that's a bezoyon. That's minhag bezoyon. And therefore, maybe it means, so too my Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to sit on a Sefer Torah. So he says, that's pshita. Migar Sefer Torah Metzamos. Why would you think that a Sefer Torah is any different or any worse than bones? Obviously, it's a bizayon, and obviously, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. So therefore, why do you need to tell me that halacha? Should we push it that you can't sit on bones? Ella, a seifa. What does it mean on the seifa? The latter part says, Rashi, imhaya misyare, broken. That if you're concerned that it may get stolen, a sefer Torah may get taken, listen, whatever, then you're allowed to sit on your saddlebag in which the sefer Torah is contained therein, and it's not an issue. Okay. Oh, Rachbam, Rabbi Yehuda, Kol Haroah Mace. This is a pretty wild halacha, because the question is exactly how far does this halacha mean? Kol Haroah Mace, anyone who sees maybe a funeral procession, you see a mace, question what that means. Ve'eno malavo, and you do not accompany it, doesn't mean it's a relative of yours. You just happen to find out that there's a levaya. But it says you saw it. Doesn't mean that. It means you literally, it's right in front of your face, and you just maybe turn the other way. Over mishum loy l'rosh. Charef asahu. That also, just like you walking into a basic pharos with your tefillin on, that is also a way of being loy l'rosh, that you were humiliated and embarrassed the mace. We'll discuss why in a moment, why that makes.
Does Roya mace mean actual seeing, or just have to see the box?
That's a good question. What does that language mean? Called Roya Hamace. It doesn't say you saw the Leviah. It sounds like you actually saw the mace itself, or maybe it means within the Dalet Amos of the mace. It's hard to believe that you drive by a funeral home, which always has services that, you're violating the law of the rush. It sounds like you're right in front of the mace, and the mace is right there.
But if you pass by a funeral procession, you're in your car, and there's a procession.
You're not supposed to go in front of it. You know that? You ever know?
What's that?
Not talking about mace. If you saw, you knew it was a Jewish funeral.
Yeah.
You hear? You're not allowed to go in front of the
procession.
Okay. Some say that your car, there's different proportions, let's say with regard to an Eruv, which is a completely side issue. Most people don't hold like this, that even the busiest streets, not a Rishus HaRabim, because cars is a Rishus HaYochid. Some say every car, you're in your own private domain. So you can have millions of cars driving by on a highway, because each car is a Rishus HaYochid. Most people don't hold like that. So maybe you're not even near. You're near, but you're not near. You're driving your own little rishus. Anyway, so we're going to get back to this idea in a second. The Marsha has a very interesting Marsha, very clean Marsha. We'll get to it in a moment. Before we do that, let's continue. So that's if you didn't do the right thing. However, what happens, im hilvahu? What if you were accompanying of the mace, maschara? What is your reward for doing so? So Omar Vasi, Alavakos of Raman, him, the Pasuk says, Mal Hashem Chonin Dal. Malva is a lender, right? So a person who lends, push it, means if you lend money to someone who is a Dal, who is poor, then you've acted graciously, right? You've acted kindly, and Hashem will look graciously upon you for lending to someone who is poor, who may not necessarily have the means to pay you back. Mechavdu Chonin Evyonin. You honored for the poor person, such an individual will receive chen, will receive grace and rewarded as such. However, as Rashi explains, malva Hashem, a malva is generally someone who lends money, but also in plain words could be like a levaya, someone who accompanies, a mace, that which is a mace is comparable to a dal, someone who is poor. Then, in fact, that's you'll be rewarded for it.
But I think it's in the beginning of Brachos or somewhere.
Yeah.
That the one of the biggest mitzvahs that one can do.
Yeah.
Is how Brachos makes. Why?
Yeah.
They can't return the favor.
They can never say thank you to you.
Right. So on that.
That's a true.
Mitzvah. Right. Right. So if you look, the Marshal touches upon what you just said. The Marshal, on maybe worthwhile looking at. It's on page Hay, which is. The facing page is page 8. Okay,
right.
It's only a few lines. So, okay, so it's the Marshal, which is the smaller font on the left columns, the two columns. Dav Yuches Amud Aleph Mishum Loig L'Rosh. The question is, Loig L'Rosh means you've embarrassed the mace. Well, it makes sense if you embarrass the mace by wearing tefillin. The mace can't do mitzvahs anymore, so you violate Loig L'Rosh. But our Gemara says. That when are you also violate this pasuk of Lulig Rush is also if you see a mace and you do not accompany it, you're not part of the funeral procession. Why is that Lulig Rush? Why is that a mitzvah which the mace can't do anymore? Like wearing tefillin, I can understand. But why is that Lulig Rush? That's what the Marshal says like this. He explains why is the mace considered to be a poor person? So the Marshal says he says there's two ways of doing kindness. One is lashirim. If you do kindness to someone who is pretty wealthy, and mitzapul tashlum gmul, hopefully one day
he'll pay it back.
Mashain kein gemilus chasadim l'rosh. Comes to giving things and being kind to a poor person, there's a good chance you're never going to get it back. Probably a very, very good chance. And if we're dealing with a mace,
father.
It's right. Definitely not getting it back. And therefore, he says like this: Gemilus chasadim l'maisim ki'il osa chesed l'rosh. The reason why it's lowly garush, a mace is called someone who's poor, is because just like a poor person can never pay you back or very unlikely to do so, so to a mace. All the chesed you do to a mace, it is like he is a poor person. And he says, kosu chesed emes. When the pasuk says that do for me a chesed emes, so he says the gemilus chasadim she'osim im hameis who gemilus chesed shel emes.
Right.
The lo garush, and that's why it's called lo garush ilu gam asahu the person lo yuchel shalim lo he cannot pay you back. The omer she'im malbohu. Therefore, the greatness is that if you accompany this person, which is a chesed that you're performing to this. Mace, Omer Kasa, Mal Hashem Chonin Dal, Gam Sheh Mace, Lo Yochel Shalim Lo Kedal Hazeh.
These two pieces. So a man can't pay back, that's the same way.
Right? So that's why it's not just a Lulig Rush that someone who's poor, you're making fun of the guy, he has no money, but it's the mace is mamish like a poor person in that regard. Okay.
Wouldn't it be an Indian that you come to the Leviah, you come to pay a shiver call after the Leviah, let's say you come to the Leviah, whatever it is, if the family of the mace is aware of it, there is a possibility that they'll treat you differently.
But the mess, we're not talking the family.
Right.
We're talking the mess.
But
we're only concerned with the mess here.
Well, but there can be a payback.
But it's not from the mess.
Right.
You're giving the cover to the mess.
Yeah,
the family? Listen, they'll give you. Except that's a family. But you're talking here. The whole Indian is you're talking of the, you know, the deceased. You can't say the family and the deceased are two different parties.
Probably, if you don't get anything back, or if let's say it's a mace mitzvah, then it's probably a greater mitzvah because you're for sure not to him and not to anyone. But okay. Now we're going to go into a little story. Right. We like stories. Right to the two dots. Rav Chiya, Rav Yonasan, Havi Shakli, V'Azli, B'Vesek Faris. So where would you find these two great guys, Rav Chiya and Rav Yonasan, taking a stroll in the cemetery? So, Havi Kishadi Techelta, Rav Yonasan, the Techelta, the Chelus, which most of us don't wear anymore, the blue, the tzitzis were of Rav Yonasan were hanging out of his garment. So Omrulei Rav Chiya said, Dalia, which as Rashi says, Hagvihu, lift it up, put it, it's like tuck it in, Kadeshul Yomru, so that the people in this cemetery should not say, quote, Vamachar boyin atzlein. Tomorrow or sometime in the future, this guy is going to be with us. V'akshav, but now, mecharpenosa, now he's humiliating us. Now he's embarrassing us, flaunting his ability to do mitzvos. So Omer Leh said, what are you talking about? Why do I have to talk in my tzitzis? Which, of course, we know is the custom that one does nowadays. But why should I? The whole purpose of doing that, apparently, is because... What?
Recent also.
Correct. But what are the, what, who am I embarrassing? They're, it's a mace. How, what do they know? And that's what he asks. Ummi yadai kuli hai. Do they really know so much? Do they really know this? Boksiv. And the answer to this question isn't going to be until all the way to the very, very bottom of the next almond, which we'll get to in a month or so. But is it just like a few stories and trying to bring that proof whether or not a mace, in fact, knows? Does a mace know what's going on in this world? Okay. So we'll bring different proofs, and obviously the fact that we talk in the tzitzis shows we're at least choshish that they are aware of everything that's going on. Possibly that it's not a suffix, that for sure they do know. But we'll get to that when we get to it. Mi yadei kuliyad, they know so much about tzitzit. Pasuk says in Koheles, "V'hamesim einu yodei mu'uma," that mesim do not know mu'uma anything. They don't know anything. They don't know what's going on over here. So what's the difference? If I walk in a basic forest with my tefillin on my head, with my tzitzis dangling on the ground, who cares? They don't know anything. What's the problem? So merely said, "There's a the problem is that you're quoting psukim, pretending that you know pshat in the pasuk, but you don't know what you're talking about. That's the incorrect reading of that pasuk. That's not what the pasuk means. The pasuk does not mean that mason do not know anything. And Yisim, as I'll prove to you, do know what's going on in this world. And therefore, in Karitza Loshini, if you read that pasuk once, if it was taught to you once, you certainly did not learn it two times. And if you want to tell me, the Im Shanita Loshilash, that you learned it twice, there's no way three times you learned it. Once you've learned it three times, you'd have really have gotten the right shot. And this, you're way off. And therefore, you didn't learn it three times. And Im Shalash, if in fact you did learn it three times, well, Pirishloch, it was never taught to you the right way. So when you were taught it three times, hopefully you got it. But the way it was taught to you, you were taught wrong. And therefore, that you're walking around with the wrong knowledge. This is what the Pasuk means. Ki achayim... Yodim Shemusu, when it says that those who are alive, they know about their death. Eil tzadikim shebimisasa nikruchayim. This is referring to the tzadik that even though they're physically not alive, they're considered as though they are nikruchayim, as though they are alive. We'll get to the proof in that in a minute. But the next page is going to translate this pasuk a little bit better. But the pasuk says, "Kechayim yodim shemusu," that the living ones know that they are going to die. Right. So the question is, oh, what do we learn from there? Ah, it's a proof that someone who is dead, someone who's a tzaddik, even when he's dead, is still halachically, he's still considered alive. What do you mean? It says that they know that they're going to die, so they do die. If they know they're going to die, they do die, right? So Rashi says like this: Elu, just going before we get too far ahead of ourselves. Rashi says Elu tzadikim umay yodim shemusu. What does it mean that they know they're going to die? It means nosnim elibam yom hamisa. They already place within their hearts and their mindset that there is a concept called Yom Hamisa, and therefore, because they know that their lives are finite in this world, physically, Umoshkin Yedehem Min Havera, they will distance themselves from sin. However, Rishayim En Yodim Uma, when the Pasuk says the Rishayim don't know anything, it means She'osim Atzmam, they make themselves Ke'enim Yodim V'chatoim, as though they don't know what they're doing, as though they're doing nothing wrong, as though that there's no Yom HaMisa, as though there's no Yom HaDin, and therefore they continue to sin. And therefore, V'hamesim Enu Yodim Uma, the Mesim is not talking about the Tzadik, it's talking about the Rasha, as we're going to see. And the Rasha, who is considered to be dead, even while he is physically alive, dead man walking, he's considered to be dead, even though he's walking the earth, but he's worthless. He has nothing to contribute positively to society. Einim yodim umah, that was what the pasuk means. They know nothing, which means they act oblivious to all of their responsibilities of this world, and they just indulge in their various titles. So, but getting to the positive part, tzadikim shemi misas nikruchai. But tzadik, even they're no longer with us physically, are considered alive. Shnemar. The pasuk says in Shmuel Bet that David says, praising various individuals, he praises someone by the name of Binyahu ben Yehoyada. He says that he's a Ben Ish Chai. Those are going to be the three key words, which you've heard of the Ben Ish Chai. This is where it comes from. A son of a living man. Rab Pu'alim, a man of many deeds. Mikatzael, from this place, Katzael. Who hiko es shnei Ariel, he hits two lions, Moab in Moab. Vuyeret, we're going to interpret what this whole pasuk means. Vuyeret, he went down to hiko es Ari and smote the lion, betoch habor, in the midst of a pit, biyom hasholeg, on a wintry day. Okay, that's a nice little pasuk. But the key words are ben ishkai. And where it says, what? Atikuli alma b'nei mesin in who? What does it mean that I am he was the son of a living man? What do you mean he was the son of a living man? There's no one else who is the son of a living man. What does that mean? Everyone else is a son of someone who's passed away, right? B'nei Mesi Ninu. Ela Ben Ishchai, it means Shafil B'misaso Karichah. Even while he is no longer with us, he's still considered to be very much alive. And this is what Tosa says, that in the Pasuk, it doesn't actually say Ben Ishchai. That's not the word. Ben Ishchayil. A soldier, a warrior. So Tosa says, his first Tosa, on Amud Beis, Bisvarim Meduyukim Ksiv Chai, Bekrein and Chayil. The Kreen and Ksiv are different. The way it's written is Chai. But the way it's read is Chayil. Ben Ksiv Dayek. The way it's written is how we are making this Diyuk. Shuluk siv chayil el chay. The question is, why does it say, if it's Ben Ishchayil, so why is it written differently? Why is the siv chay? It teaches this in you. Because otherwise, just let it be written the way it's recited. So therefore, Ben Ishchayil is the daf going to make this point. Now we're going to darshan us this pasuk. Rav po'alim mikabtzael. What does this mean? Shiribam v'kabetz po'alim l'tayru. He was able to gather many in order to engage them in Torah study. Bahu hiko es shnei Ariel, and he hit these two shnei Ariel. Moav, what does this mean? Shohaniach kemoso, there was no one as great as he. Lo b'mikdash rishon, lo b'mikdash sheni. This was the declaration that was said about him. And why is he called, what does that have to do with the first and second base of Mikdash? So, you have to go back to the previous Amud, which we're going to go back to again. But the very bottom Tosfot on Yud Ches Amud Aleph, Shnei Ariel Moab, Al Shem David v'Shlomo, Shibanu Es Habayis, Ubo Merus HaMoaviyah. So, they came from Rus, who was from Moab. So, the Pasuk, what says, Shnei Ariel Moab, is referring to those who came from Moab, and the ones who, Shlomo, who built the Beis HaMikdash, and this person was even greater than they. That's how great this person was. This is really just a sidebar of what we're trying to get at. Then the Gemara continues and says, "Hu yered hiko es ahari b'toch habor," he smote the lion in the pit, "b'yom ha'sholeg," on a snowy day. So the Machlokes what this means. "Ikdamri," some say the tavring zizi, debarred, that some say that he shattered hail, but nafas v'tava, and he went to immerse himself therein. As Rashi says on the top, k'nil asik v'torah, he was tamei, he was a balkari, and he needed to immerse himself to become tahar, and he didn't care that it was a yom sholeg, he didn't care, and he went into the mikvah, even on a cold day. Some say that tanisifra, the beirav, Vayomer D'Susa, that he learned this very difficult sefer, which is comparable to a lion, on this wintry day. The significance of it being a wintry day is that it's less sunlight. It's a shorter day. And to be able to have learned such a difficult sefer in such a small amount of time shows his greatness. And what is the Sifrei Devei Rav? So the second line in Rashi says that's Toras Kohanim. Toras Kohanim is another way of saying Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra. So why, if it's Sefer, part of Sefer Vayikra, why is it called Betoch Habor? In the middle of a pit. So Tosfos says, the significance of Betoch Habor, Shub Emsa Hasfarm, because we know Vayikra is smack dab in the middle of the five Sfarim of the Torah. And therefore, it means Betoch Habor. Okay. And let's just get to the two dots that I want to see. Let's see this Tosos on the other one. V'ha-meisim enim yodim u'uma. The meisim don't know anything. El rishoyim shemich... this is what the pasuk really means. This is the correct translation. El rishoyim shemichayehim koreim meisim. Even while they're alive, they're considered as though they're dead. Shnemar, yatah and you cholul rasha nasti Yisrael. You are considered to be like a rasha, a dead rasha, you nasi of Yisrael. And this is referring to Sidkiyahu. Sidkiyahu, apparently, for some reason, we wish to use as the example of the Russia. And the problem with that is on Shabbos in Parchelik 2 weeks ago, the Gemara in Sanhedrin said that Sidkiyahu
kept his father and his son, one was bad and one was good.
Sidkiyahu was a big son.
Right, but his father was no good, I think, and his son was the
Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu's son, Menashe, was no good. His father, Achaz, was no good. Sidkiyahu was a big tzaddik, and it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll remember this language of the Gemara, that Hashem wanted to return the world to Tohu Vavahu, because over there it says the word Bracious, when it talks about his Malchus, even though it wasn't the first time he was a king. But he says, because of the generation of Sidkiyahu, but once Hashem saw, Kivon Shnistakub is Sidkiyahu, Niskar Daitum. Hashem looked at Sidkiyahu, who's such a great guy, so he was calmed down. Which the question is, so how can we learn out from this pasuk that he was, that Rishonim, while they're alive, they're like they're dead. Sidkiyahu, the Gemara says, was a tzad. So the Gemara over there in Sanhedrin also said that he had one flaw. The pasuk says, Vayas Harav V'Eni Hashem, that he did something wrong. What did he do wrong? Shehoya biyado limchos v'lemicha. That he had the ability to protest against what all the people in his generation were doing, and he didn't. And therefore, that's the reason why the Gemara over here is calling him a Rasha. That he had the ability to do something, and he didn't. So therefore, Nikra Mason. It's as though he was dead. Because while you're alive, you can make an impact. You can change lives, your life, other people's lives. So that was Sidkiyahu's purpose, was to effect change in his community, in his country. And he did not do so, therefore he's considered to be a Russian. The Eboy Sema, here's the more famous proof. Mehacha, from here, Al Pi Shnayim Edim, Al Pi Shlosh Edim, Yumas Hameis. With either two or three witnesses, you can kill the dead guy. Very strange Lashon. Yumas Hameis. You can kill the guy who's dead. You know, once you're dead, you can't kill him. So that, the Gemara says, Chayu, he's alive. El Hameis Mikara. He says, no, he's dead. So you kill the guy who's dead. He's a dead man walking. And therefore, that's what this Gemara is coming to tell us. Now, some of the Mefarshim over here explain, it's brought down in the base, the Sefer, Beis Yosef, that the reason, what's the significance of a tzaddik? Why is he considered alive, even though he's dead? Or Russia, why is he considered dead, even though he's alive? So he says, because Hashem is considered to be chai. Hashem is considered to be alive. And there are other things that are considered to be alive because of our dveikus, our connection to Hashem. If we have an attachment, a direct relationship to Hashem, then we're considered to have a connection to eternality, a mitzvah, and therefore we're considered to be alive. For example, the Torah is Eitz Chayim, is alive. when it comes to the Israel, it's Me'atem Advekim Hashem Elokeichem. If you don't, you're Chayim. You're always alive. Chayim Kulchem Hayom, always. It doesn't make a difference. And therefore, the Tzaddik, even though he's no longer alive, but because he is Dovuk to Hashem, therefore he is eternal. There's an element of being eternal like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Your Torah and Mitzvot is not anything that can ever be severed, can ever be taken away from you. That's something which lasts forever. And therefore that's Chayim. And on the other hand, a Rasha who does not have a relationship with Hashem, anything which is separated from Hashem is not only that you're not eternal, but you do not have the ability of reaching eternality of life, so therefore you're finite, and therefore you're considered to be dead even at this moment. So that's how the some portion explains Sadiqim or Nikrachayim is because of their connection and relationship to Hashem. Let's just quickly see a few of these lines on this Tosfot, and then we'll stop. This Tosfot on the previous Amud discusses the inyan of wearing tzitzis, tucking them in, should you, shouldn't you, as well as, in addition to wearing the tachrichim, the mace, also, we have a talus. Mace is buried in the talus.
But it's not a real talus. You have to make a trick.
They wear the apostle, the talus, and they tuck it in the gartel, different minhagim. So this, not everyone had that minhag. We're going to see an interesting minhag what Tosfos had. Right here. We'll fly through it in just a few minutes and we'll stop. Tosvos l'machor boin etzlenu v'achshav mi'charfin osanu, which means that the mason knows, so talking to tzitzis. So obviously we're in the middle of this whole discussion because we're not sure of whether or not mason do know. The whole pasuk he proved, which he thought meant that mason do not know, was wrong. That's not the correct translation of that pasuk. So b'tema. V'had amrinan b'per tcheles, it's brought down to the Masechtas Menachos. He shaita vaydi raminan lay perish. What does that those words mean? Nosnin tzitzis betalosehet. We put the tzitzis in their talis. Mishum lo garash. Because of lo garash, the question basically is okay. We passel the talis, but it doesn't sound that that's what they used to do. It sounds like they would have the mace wear a talis.
Right.
The question is, if the whole issue of me wearing my tzitzis out is a little garush, because I'm within the proximity of a mace, so how could we wrap a talus around a mace? Isn't that a little garush, a greater level of a little garush? The Eish Lomar, and even to passel the talus because of a little garush, which doesn't really get into this, some cut the strings, and then they tuck in the garter. The problem with that is that it maybe still is lo garush, because if it's still a four-cornered garment, that garment should have tzitzis on it. So, passeling the talus really could be more problematic. That's why what some people do is they actually cut the talus itself, so that it's almost like rounded off, so it's no longer a four-cornered bagging. That's what some people do. Okay, so anyway, Tosa says like this, Ve'esh lomar dehache perusha hacha. What is it? The explanation over here. It says b'masha chayim mitzuyim v'amesim enum mitzuyim v'gadol hamitzuba v'osam misha shem mitzuba v'osam. He says like this, that mesim are not mitzuba. They do not have to do the mitzvah, and the someone who is alive does have to do the mitzvah. Gadol mitzuba v'osam. Someone who is obligated to do it has a greater obligation. And therefore, again, the problem would seemingly be that you should not have this person wear these tzitzis, the mace, because he's not a mitzuba v'osa. V'ahid d'hatcheles haynu d'rama chutim l'mesim. That what they would do is that they would actually remove the strings off the garment. Yashav, and now on the Misalkanosan, Umayshna, Omer Ben Otam, he says, Davka im ho yu ragilim kulam b'chayehim lilvosh talus b'dalat konflikt. So Ben Otam says that the only time that we would have any of these customs that we mentioned is in the event that they're wrong. Everyone was accustomed in our in their lifetime to wear a talis and where to wear tzitzis. The gam kol oskin behen yesh lehem tzitzis v'hu lo garush. If everyone in that community wore tzitzis, then it would be lo garush. In lo hayu lehem tzitzis, then it's not. Okay, Abel, but skipping a few more words to the end. Abel, anu shigam b'chayenu. Interesting, Rabbeinu Tam says, in our lifetime, Rabbeinu Tam's time, ein min hagenu lilvosh tomid tzitzis. It was not always the custom to wear tzitzis, and that's what he says. Ihavi raminen lehu, if he would wear them, havi kamo loligarush. It would be considered a problem of loligarush. So therefore, this was the issue, that since people did not always wear tzitzis, if you would put them on, then it would be another issue of logarush. Maybe you should put the tzitzis on those who wore them in their lifetime. So he said, no, it's still logarush lacherim, the other mason that are in the cemetery. The ode, this is what I wanted to get to. Oh, Rabbeinu Tam, Sheshama Mi'anshe Lutir, he says, the Masir Matzitzes, the Tzitzes Ol Laminyad Taryag. The idea of the Tzitzes, it represents 613, including, so Tzitzes is 600, the numerical value, and 8 Chutin, and the 5 knots, the Sharim. The Im Lovish Tzitzes near Ki'ilu Kayim Kol Torah. Says the reason why we take it off is because if we have him wear the talis, it's going to be as though he's testifying that he's did all the Torah. Umitzi kashikra, looks like he's lying. And therefore we take it off. And he says, but that doesn't make sense. Vizel nehira, the gam chayim ata, lama lovshin halalu kaima kol Torah kula. So are we liars that we wear tzitzis? Because we don't fulfill all 613 mitzvos. And therefore, because of this, it's a dispute exactly what to do. Should you wear them? Should you not wear them? And if we go all the way down to the bottom, which we'll stop, he quotes the Ritzba, Hayoragil Shlol Hasiram Min Aknaf, that he would not remove them, Elokoshram Betoch Aknaf, and he would kind of like put them in the inside. Lafuki Nashim Mipluta Imhim Chayav and Betzitzes. If he's chayim and tzitzis, he has. If not, they're covered up. So therefore, to cover both bases, he would wear them, but cover them up. But obviously, whatever the minhag is, it's a fascinating thought. We'll stop here.